Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica, Mitch Albom, and Bob Ryan.
I am Mike Lupica, MLB.com and the New York Daily News.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
And I am Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN, and we heartily welcome you to the Thursday edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast in this month of October, which we all agree is the nirvana for the all-around sports fan. But no question, we had a moment of of greatness last night with the abrupt ending of a 4 hour and 15 minute baseball game. Chris Taylor, who entered the game, gentlemen, 8 for 72.
Yep.
And then made an out. He ended the game as a defensive replacement, and he made an out. And so he was 8 for 73 at the moment that he entered into Dodger history with a two-run homer in the bottom of the ninth as the Dodgers win the wild card game against the Cardinals to set up what, with all due respect to those Cardinals and Cardinal Nation, the setting up the series that we want, which is the Giants and the Dodgers.
Bob, I didn't know Chris Taylor was going to hit a home run, but the Cardinals pitchers, both of them, were in bad counts throughout that inning. Okay, three balls. They had gotten to two and one on Taylor, and Pujols stung one. Okay, and then Souza stung one, and then Bellinger, who can't hit right now, gets a walk. But I'm telling you, I know the game was long last night, but and I know there were no runs scored. You know, 1-1 going to the bottom of the ninth, and all of that stuff. But to me, it was such compelling theater for the simple reason that a team that won 106 games, we're going to have a 106 game win team against 107 in the upcoming series, like nothing we've had from the Giants and the Dodgers, okay? All of that stuff, that they were hanging by a thread and their season was hanging by a thread as the defending champs, made it such amazing theater, and the way it ended is why baseball is great.
Well, it's a game that ends with no clock, and you can continue. You can make your own story in baseball as long as you don't make that 27th out, and that is the dynamic of baseball. You need that 27th out to get it done, and in this case, they would have needed more than 27 had the Dodgers not scored, because they would have gone into the 10th inning. By the way, right. I didn't know. Did you guys know that there was no runner on second base in the playoffs?
Yeah, I did not.
So yep. I learned that.
They weren't going to use that.
I learned that last night.
What made it so great were the overtones of desperation and the one game nature of it all. I mean, that's the thing that would have made it maybe tragic for Dodgers fans if they lost. But the ninth inning, the bottom of the ninth, even by itself, was a microcosm of what had been a game of, like, we're throwing everything out there, starting with when they took Max Scherzer out. And I mean, that was a gutsy move, considering...
But, Mitch, did you have a problem with it? Because I didn't.
I personally do, because I know Max Scherzer, and I know that he could right his ship over time in the course of the game. And I also think it's awful early to be counting on, considering how these games get played, and it did play out, whereas you start using your relievers one at a time for, it's almost like every a boutique service, every batter gets his own pitcher, and after a while you start to run out of pitchers. And consider, this is where I take it, the point I'm making, consider the bottom of the ninth. The Dodgers started by pinch hitting for Jansen, who was fantastic, and you don't really want to take him out of the game, but you got to, because you're at the bottom of the ninth. They pinch hit for him.
And he's a one-inning guy. He's really a one-inning guy.
But he pitched great, and then Lux comes up for him and never even bats. Then Pujols comes up instead once they made the pitching change. Then Souza comes up. You've got three pinch hitters, two of which actually reach the plate, one who does not, and then Bellinger, whose season, you know, in and of itself was a tragedy over the regular season, and he manages to eke out a walk there after swinging at some bad pitches, I thought, and then you finally get Taylor up there, who's maybe the least likely guy to hit the home run. All that happens in the bottom of the ninth. Look at the maneuvering. Look at the players that were used. Look at the pitchers that were used in a half an inning there. But that's what you have to do in these one game somebody dies situations, and the Dodgers survived.
Well, that's the way the game is played now. You know, it wouldn't have been played that way, you know, even 10 years ago, let alone 40 or 50.
The rosters haven't grown. I mean, you still only have so many guys on your
team.
Did
I hear that they had 60, they had activated 16 position players last night? And he had all kinds of maneuverability available.
I love Scherzer. I mean, we both are members, charter members. Bob is too, of the Max Scherzer fan club. That game, I was saying to Tyler Brewer, Dodger fan, before we started today, that game he pitched last night was similar to the one he pitched in Game 7 against the Astros of the World Series 2 years ago, where he didn't make it past the fifth inning and seemed to keep falling out of trees and landing on his feet. And I don't think anybody watching the game thought he had his best stuff. And if it had been August 15th, Roberts would absolutely have let him stay out there to find his best stuff, okay? And he didn't last night. And it was great theater when he made Roberts take the ball out of his glove, okay? Because he's, you know, he's in those moments, he's completely nuts, okay? But Roberts trusted his bullpen, and one of the things he did across this season was he rehabilitated Kenley Jansen, who went from a guy he couldn't trust last October to a guy he had get him the three biggest outs of this season and give them a chance in the bottom ninth. I swear to God, guys, I was so into this game last night. I looked at him, I said, "Holy crap, it's midnight." it's a nine-inning game, and it's midnight already. And the Cardinals only have to blame themselves because my math might be off. They were 0-for-1,000,000 with runners in scoring position.
I think it was 10 officially. I think they reached double figures in that regard. No. The bullpen was
and Bob, how about Joe Kelly, the ghost from Red Sox past, coming out to relieve Max Scherzer?
Yeah. Well, anybody charting his ups and downs, it's hilarious. But you're right, he has, you know, we all know he's always had good stuff. You know, just a matter of
two hits for the Cardinals out of that bullpen over the last whatever, you know, from the with one out in the fourth till the end of the game.
No, well, we got the series though. I mean, offense. The Cardinals had their thing. They're always going to remember they got there by winning 17 in a row, and they had that wonderful stretch. But the fact is that the other team won 106 games, and they deserve to keep playing. And we're happy they are.
Hey, Mitch, how about Justin Turner?
I'm surprised it's a
how about
first
Justin
time
Turner?
That the...
How many big hits has this guy gotten?
I know.
Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness, Mitch. He always steps up for them.
He's a big game player, and it's going to be fun to see him. And it's going to be fun to see if San Francisco can carry what they did in the regular season all the way through to in the playoffs. There's no reason to suspect that they can't, but everybody still remains blinking when they look at the San Francisco Giants saying, how did they do it?
So true.
What did we miss? How did we overlook this? And you know, I guess there will be some pundits who, if the Dodgers win this series or win it handily in any way, will say, well, you see, it was just a mirage. We weren't wrong. We were just temporarily wrong for like 7 months, but now we're not wrong. But if they manage to beat the 106 team rival, and you guys follow baseball so intricately, I guess you're not surprised at anything, but I was surprised that these guys have never met in a postseason
series. Well, it's just
series.
The nature of this, you know,
they're in the same
format.
Division. You'd have to be a wild card.
It's a
but
it's
a different format. They did play a pretty famous three-game series. I guess, Bob, technically part of the regular season. Did they call it part of the regular season in 1951?
Same as the Bucky Dent game. That was game 163. And in the case of 1951, it was game 155. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's the way it was.
The shot heard around the world.
You're going back a long way just for that.
No, but I'm saying.
What do you mean?
But it is one of that. But the reason I'm referencing it, Mitch, is yes, I have gone back a lot way, except it's. It's one of the most famous moments in baseball history.
That's right.
I'm sure we'll be seeing it to kick off the first
game. By the way,
Mitch, Friday.
when I have the same feeling about the Giants. So the Giants may win the series. Who knows? Okay. 20 years ago, the Mariners won 116 games. 116 games. and were, which made them 21 games better than the Yankees had been during the regular season. And the Yankees ended up getting them in the playoffs.
Yeah. Also, don't discount the inertia factor of a win like last night for the Dodgers. You don't want to have to play that game. And I'm sure the Giants on the last game of the season, last night of the season, were thrilled that they didn't have to play this game. But as we saw with Kirk Gibson's home run in 1988 and other things like that, there are moments that just make you feel like you're a little more destined to do it. And that's one such moment. The Dodgers will carry that in to the Giants series. The Giants will not. The Giants will just have not played in 5 or 6 days. And so I wouldn't be surprised if the Dodgers come out hot and win that first one off of the momentum from this one.
I was in contact with the Dodgers manager, who you guys know I like a lot and stay in touch with throughout the season. He has a great belief in this team. He wasn't afraid of this game. I don't know what his heart rate was in the ninth inning last time, but he has a great belief in this team. It's a great team. I mean, look at this team. Look at what they've done. Everybody says, oh, they spend. Well, the Yankees spend like that, and what's it done for them? They 7 straight NL West titles, and the only reason they don't make it 8 this year is because they win 106 and somebody else wins 107. Well, guess what? They got to 107 last night, and now, as Bob says, we are getting the series that we want to see. And by the way, there was a chance last night with the leadoff hitter for the Dodgers in the ninth for one of the great stories of all time, if Pujols had hit one out against his old team. And
you know, he got a pretty good snack.
He did. I was going to say, didn't you, Mitch, just the second it came off the bat, didn't you think it had a chance?
Yes, I did.
I didn't think it had a chance to get out. I thought it might have had a chance to get over, but the guy was, the center fielder was playing it perfectly. But he didn't hit a dribbler to third base. They had solid hits the whole inning, and then the big one.
Once a technical thing to look at the Dodger Giants series, each team will be missing its slugging first baseman. Just so you know.
Brandon Belt. I actually think Brandon Belt, Bob, is a bigger loss for the Giants than Muncy is for the Dodgers. As good as Max Muncy is and has been. And by the way, the great thing about the Dodgers is, and their resources and the prospects they're able to trade off, is that they can pitch Max Scherzer in the wild card game. And then who do they got lined up for games 1 and 2? Bueller and Urias. So, by the way, 120 games this year.
And now you guys can help me and correct me if I'm wrong. I've heard a rumor that there's another series in the National League. Is that right? There's two other teams?
It is the most ignored series of this whole baseball.
No, all kidding.
Season.
A lot
all
of people still think the Brewers have the goods. They do. Even though they didn't have a great September.
But if there was an undercard... an undercard mentality among
Bobby. Bobby, we'll get to that. First, a word from our friends at Geico. We'll get to that. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too. Because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. There was another wild card game played on Tuesday night.
Yes, there was.
It was a different kind of theater. And I don't know if I was shocked by the result, but off of what we had seen when the Yankees went into Fenway, the second to last weekend of the regular season. No, I had said to Red Sox fan friends of mine all during the day, they have to keep Judge and Stanton on the property. Now, that was not an incredibly brilliant idea on my part, but there's things that happen early in games. And I want to ask you guys this. Is the night different if Stanton's ball goes out in the top of the first?
Of course it is. Which leads me to the fact that in game, the biggest game of the year, right, in game 163, that clown is standing on first when he should have been on second.
That's who they are, Bob. It's who they are.
I mean, when does it end? What is this? Oh,
there's an arrogance and an entitlement to a team that has no money in the bank for a long time. Okay, and for him to stand and watch. And by the way, if I urge anybody, and I he's a nice old guy. I like John Sterling a lot. Mitch, have you heard John Sterling's call? The radio call of Stanton's ball in the first inning. A Stantonian! Wait, yeah. What did I get wrong?
He's on first base.
And Vasgersian, by the way, wasn't much better because it would have been one thing if he was watching the game on the monitor. He wasn't. They were there, okay? And he did it again. No, he didn't. And by the way, the one later, that would have been a home run everywhere. Everybody's saying, "Oh, Fenway got him." No, that was not a home run in most other ballparks. Not the one in the first inning.
No, but he should have been second.
What's the feeling there, Mike, in New York about Gerrit Cole? I mean, he was brought in for that reason.
Mitch, he got paid $324 million to win that game. And if not to win the game, Mitch, to pitch the way the other starting pitcher pitched in the game. Right. Nate Eovaldi.
At least do what Scherzer did. Yeah.
Yes. And I'm telling you, we have been seeing that for the second half of the season, and he seemed to right himself after the whole sticky stuff because he was a Spidey Tack man, okay? Right. And it makes you wonder how much of what he was doing over the last few years, whatever his velocity was, because you guys know this, okay? You can throw 200 miles an hour, and big league hitters are going to hit the ball out, okay? He has lost movement on his pitches, and he threw a please crush me pitch to Xander Bogaerts in the first inning. And Bob, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Eric Davis's two-run shot that year the Reds were playing the A's and Dave Stewart in the top of the first, okay? Sometimes a first-inning home run feels like a late-inning home run. And the Yankees, it's the old Tyson thing. Everybody's got a plan until they get hit, okay? Stanton's ball doesn't go out. Bogaerts hits one out to center, and it's a completely different night until we get to the seminal moment of the game. Mitch, sending Aaron Judge when they did, and him getting nailed by that relay throw.
I'm defending Phil Nevin and all third base coaches in that regard. When it takes the perfect throw, and it's that close. It's close. They say it was out, but it was close. I have no fault with that. I don't fault Phil Nevin for sending him at all. Do you,
Mitch? Do you think that Nevin's thinking had something to do with Joey Gallo, a strikeout machine? He denies that it did, but I can't believe that didn't factor into him when he's thinking, wait, do we want first and third with one out and Gallo coming to the plate, or do I want to take a chance and change the narrative right here?
But Mike, as you said before, the mood for that decision was set in the first inning.
And when
you're starting a game in desperation, you know, before the game is a half an hour old, you're already like, how the hell do we scramble out of this 3-0, deficit? You make those kind of decisions. You're forced into it. All, you know, when they say every bat at bat counts and all that, it's not a cliche. It all adds up, not so much in the mathematics of it, but in the emotion of it, and in the pressure of it, and in the decision making.
It's a great point, Mitch. You're making a great point about baseball. Okay, you're right. That decision began when Stanton's ball didn't go out, and Bogaerts, you're 100% right.
Interesting, the identity of the other home runs in that game, each hit by a leadoff man, a first baseman leadoff man, who started the season wearing the uniform of the Chicago Cubs.
Schwarber turned out to be more impactful for the Boston. We all thought the Yankees, and put me down, had won the trade deadline when they got Gallo and Rizzo. Right? Raise my hand right now. Schwarber turned out to be not only a perfect guy for that batting order. From everything I've learned from people around the team, he's a perfect guy in that clubhouse. He's a perfect conduit for everything that Alex Cora is doing. We'll get to him in a minute because the job he did this year was amazing. But if Bogaerts hit him, Schwarber put him down, okay? And everything, and then it all unfolded the way it did until, as Bob Ryan used to write, Stanton, his curtain call was a garbage time home run in the ninth inning.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And
Evaldi? How about Nate Evaldi, okay? And he had pitched big games against the Yankees in the playoffs before. In the year the Red Sox won the World Series, Mitch, he was the guy who got the ball when it was 1-1, and everybody thought the series had shifted the Yankees' way after they had won Game 2. That's when Judge walked out with the boombox blaring New York, New York, and it came back to bite him in the ass. But the Red Sox won, scored 16 runs that night, but Evaldi, in the biggest moment of his career to that point, gave them one run, okay? And he was brilliant on Tuesday night.
No, he had his stuff. He was topping off around 99. He has full command of it. He's got four pitches. No, he's become, you know, a very beloved figure around here, I can tell you that.
He struck out.
Mitch, when you're going into the game,
the sixth inning.
Mitch, yeah. I wanted to ask you this, Mitch, because obviously Bob's from Boston, I'm from New York, so we follow these two teams far more passionately than you would ever need to. Okay, coming into the game, who did you think was going to win on Tuesday night?
I thought the Yankees had more momentum going into the game. I thought they had, you know, gotten their ship righted in terms of their big guys and getting big hits, and I thought that that's the thing that has held them back in key moments throughout the season, and I thought Cole was gonna throw that. I thought Cole was gonna throw the game that Evaldi threw.
Except basically, they banged him around this year, Bob. Right? The Red Sox had banged Cole around previously this year. His numbers were bad against the Red Sox.
Well, did they ever consider pitching anyone else?
Oh hell no! Oh my
right.
God!
So right. So, I mean, you can say whatever you want about the numbers. He was going to pitch that game. So what Mike, what outsiders are interested in who don't live in New York, I think, is like, how does the city, the fans, the management and everything deal with yet another one of these two early exits, considering how much money, considering how many trades, considering all the maneuvers they make? How bad is the hangover from this thing?
Oh, it's bad. In fact, I'm doing a parting shot, and I'll just this is like a teaser for my parting shot. Aaron Boone said something amazing after the game the other night about how the league has closed the gap on us. Okay, so just let me leave that, Mitch. Let me just leave that there, okay? But the Yankees, they need a new vision. I know what Brian Cashman is living off his resume, okay? And his resume is, yes, they never have a losing season. They have had an extraordinary historic run of winning seasons. But, Mitch, that's not what they sell there. They sell World Series or bust, okay? And they're as likely to lose a wild card game or lose a division series as they are to sniff a World Series. And even a few years ago in 17, when they got it to game, when they were up 3-2 on the Astros in the American League Championship Series, they go to Houston, and you know how many runs they scored combined in game 6 and 7? One. Yeah. One run. And even going into this game, okay, they hadn't scored against the Rays in the last weekend of the regular season, needed an infield hit to stay out of a game against the Blue Jays. Mitch, they don't see where they fit in now in the whole landscape. They're living off like a 20th century, we were the kings of the world narrative. They're not that guy anymore. And as I'll point out in my parting shot, the Dodgers spend the way they do. They just spend a hell of a lot better than the New York Yankees do.
Well, you know, when Andrew Friedman left Tampa Bay to go to Los Angeles, you know, you said to yourself, this is the marriage, a frightening marriage for the rest of the world of the genius with a unlimited checkbook. And you see the results of that.
And Mitch, one other thing, and then I'm going to throw the ball over to you and you drain a three-pointer, okay? They have two $300 million baseball players on their roster who aren't going anywhere. Gerrit Cole is one, and Giancarlo Stanton is the other. And guess who's got his hand up now wanting his wanting to get paid before he becomes a free agent next year, and that's Aaron Judge. Okay, so at what point does Hal Steinbrenner look at this operation and say, maybe we need to be a little more like the Rays? Maybe we need a guy like Andrew Friedman, because I'm not sure that Brian Cashman's that guy anymore.
Yeah. By the way,
well, that's a hard switch to make.
Yeah.
By the way, it's not as simple as let's just stop spending so much money.
No. That's not what I'm saying.
That's not what you're
saying.
The
home run or bust philosophy ain't working for him.
Right. And to start switching your roster around to play a different kind of baseball is not so easy, especially when it involves moving players that are making that kind of money and nobody else necessarily wants. So they're in a spot. Let's talk about some of the other series that are coming up quickly, and then we've got we want to talk about the Urban Meyer situation and a couple of NFL previews.
We need another hour to talk about Urban Meyer, Mitch.
Sadly. Meanwhile, over the other side of the American League, the Chicago White Sox and the Houston Astros, which is kind of a fascinating thing for all the bad karma around Houston and Justin Verlander not being a part of their picture. I don't think people remember that he's on the team. There they are again. You know, there they are again with names that have become so familiar to people, even in a league where players move around a lot in the postseason, because we've just seen, you know, there's Bregman and Correa and McCullers and all the other famous, you know, Altuve and all the famous guys that they have. Once more, taking on the White Sox, who the two managers, I think, if you add their ages together, I think it's about 200 years old.
104. Mitch, I was just writing it down on a card next to me. It's 149.
All right, so 200 is not that big an exaggeration.
No, it wasn't.
140, 77 and 72. And we all know what happened when we all saw the reaction when they hired Tony La Russa, and a lot of people rolling their eyes and saying, "What the hell is this?" But here they are at the end of the season.
I point out that we have another enticing matchup in this series. I remind everyone we are happily brought to you by Omaha Steaks. Well, we're in the autumn here in America, and fall means football, and football means grilling, at least in our family. Now, that's why for us, Omaha Steaks are part of the season. Game time? Well, that's grill time.
Omaha Steaks has our fall grilling covered at an amazing deal. Go to omahasteaks.com and enter the code REPORTERS into the search bar and order the deluxe grill out assortment. Over 30 entrees you can share with your family, including my favorites, the bacon-wrapped filet mignons, gourmet jumbo franks, and boneless chicken breasts.
Plus, when you use the code REPORTERS, you'll save over 50% on your order, and you'll get 12 free burgers. It's basically a steak between buns. Make delicious meals with your family. Give them an experience they'll truly cherish with Omaha Steaks. One of my favorite memories, not only as a kid, but even as an adult, is when you got that football game about to come up and you got the crisp air going outside, and then you get your Omaha Steaks. You say, okay, who's having steaks? Who's having franks? Who's having the chicken breast? Who's having the flamin'? And you put a little aside for you over on that far side of the grill, just so that you say, that's my little corner. I'm going to make my stuff over there. Omaha Steaks offers you all of that. You can entertain your friends and eat really well yourself.
I grilled up some Omaha Steaks burgers and some, even over the objections of Mrs. Lupica, who just thinks I like hot dogs a little too much, some dogs from Omaha Steaks.
I consider this as passing the torch, because I am new to Omaha Steaks after being aware of their existence. Oh, and what a wasted life I have led until that box arrived and we are feasting on it. And I, you know, as a dedicated carnivore, this is nirvana. So that's, but I wish I hadn't wasted those other, you know, 4 or 5 decades.
For Mitch and Bob and I, we are very conscious of whom we associate our brand with. We were so thrilled when we found out that Omaha Steaks wanted to be with us. Visit omahasteaks.com, keyword reporters. Save 50% off when you order the deluxe grill out assortment. Plus get 12 free Omaha Steaks burgers and keep making memories with the ones you love. That's omahasteaks.com, keyword reporters.
You're burying the lead, guys. I mean, come on. We have to be sure. Yes, we've got this septuagenarian managerial clash here, and you have a history. You know, they each have been around long enough to establish the history. But come on, the most interesting tidbit to fall out of this game is this is the first all-Lance pitching matchup in America, in baseball playoff history.
Thank you for that, Bob.
Lance Lynn versus Lance McCullers.
Thank you very much for that.
Should we touch on the important Jose
things? Altuve and Jose Abreu? I mean,
no, all Lance. There's plenty of Jose's out
this,
there.
Okay.
Jose, can you see? There's plenty of Jose's
mash.
Out there.
They can both mash, and what we have found out, more than ever since Dusty got to town, Mitch, is this, that whatever they did and whatever sign-stealing they did, how talented the Houston Astros are. And
that's right.
People forget how close they came to going to the World Series last year after they had been down 3-0 to the Rays.
Mm-hmm. No, they're good. I mean, the history will always debate, you know, the extent of what they did and how vital it was. And just like, you know, same with, you know, Deflategate and all that. That's another topic. They're damn good and they're back and they don't go anywhere. And this series, the American League champion could very well come from that series. Certainly not the
right.
The,
I mean, yeah. Right. Everybody's so focused on, you know, the end of the AL East runoff. Well, but, you know, no, it's you're absolutely right. Altuve, Brantley, Bregman, Alvarez, Gurriel, Correa, Tucker. These are like in modern sports where very few players stay on the same team for very long. That's like perennial already.
They have
to see
identity.
That lineup,
they stand for something there. They have an identity. I know. I know they stand for trash can banging, but they stand for baseball excellence too.
I wonder if. Rich was talking earlier about how these become bullpen games, and they become bullpen games extremely quickly. Okay, The White Sox, Mitch, they loaded up on, they doubled down on closers. Okay, they got Liam Hendricks, and they got Kimbrel. Except that those guys, I still don't think. I'll ask you both this. I still think Kimbrel is much more comfortable in the ninth inning than he is in the eighth inning.
That's a closer mentality thing of historically that we've seen, right? There's something about that when it's not on the line, they're different. Not everybody, not all of them, but we've seen enough of them. Lee Smith was like that. I mean, there's plenty of guys like that. And they need that adrenaline rush of knowing that they're going for the save and not the.
But I'm fired up for this series. I am.
I think it could be very, very good.
What is it? 4 o'clock Eastern.
I got a question for you guys. A very serious question. Do you honestly think? Do we think there will be that so much as one pitcher who goes into the seventh inning in the playoffs?
Huh.
Seriously, do you think? Yes or no? Will we see a pitcher on any team go into the seventh?
I will say there'll be one. Will it be one night where some guys just got it going so good that they'll look at him going, and everyone will be talking about, oh my God, he's still pitching in the seventh inning.
Yes.
Look at this. Whoa. Everybody, turn your televisions at the starting pitcher in the seventh inning. One. Not more than one.
I agree with you, Mitch. I agree with you. And guess what? Maybe we want a word after we see where Walker Buehler is after six in game one.
Guys, I can turn around and reach into a cabinet and pull out a scorebook from the 1975.
Don't do it. Don't do it, Bob. Don't do it.
I could. And a scorebook in game four of the 1975.
You're
going
to do it, though, aren't you? He's doing it.
Which is signed by a Cuban emigre named Luis Tiant.
I know, but it's
who pitched a complete game, 162 pitch victory over the Big Red Machine. It is science fiction now.
You don't have to go.
Tyler, can you wrap your head around
Jack
that?
How about Jack Morris going 10 innings?
Yeah, I was there. Were you there?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I was there.
Yeah. Mitch, I always reference that game seven, okay? Smoltz versus Morris, all right? It's the loudest I've ever heard baseball. Under that dome that night, it was crazy loud.
Yep. But when are you ever going to see a guy go 10 innings and lose a game in the playoffs anymore? It's not going to happen.
The answer is never. Nunca. Yeah. Jamais. Never. Never.
Never. Never. Jamais.
No, but before Morris gets the W that night, that's the night Kelly started, I told you a story before, he started walking down the dugout after Jack came out of the ninth. And Kirby Puckett told me the story, and he sees Kelly get up and start walking towards Morris, who's got his head in a towel. And all Kirby is thinking is, this is going to be great. He's thinking, this is going to be great. And he said that he got halfway there, and Kirby didn't even know how Morris saw him, but right. He just takes his head out of the towel. And he said, "Don't even effing think about it." And
yeah,
Kelly
I had heard it was, "Don't you effing dare!" But it was
it was, Kelly just turned on a dime and went back and sat down.
Okay.
All right, listen, Mitch, you teased it. Can you? Is it? Let me just tee up the Urban Meyer thing this way. Do you think he will actually make it to the end of his first season with the Jaguars?
Boy, I've heard a lot of people say that the odds are even at best that he'll do that, not just because of this most recent lapse of judgment, but you know, he and Trevor Lawrence, they're not used to this kind of losing. And they're not built for what it takes in the NFL. You know, you can come into a college program, and it still was a long time before Urban Meyer had to build from losing in a college program, but you can turn things around fairly quickly in college. But the NFL, you're stuck with salary cap issues and draft position and all the rest of that stuff. And just when you get players that are finally getting good, their contracts are up and they can take off in free agency, it's hard to feel sympathetic for Urban Meyer.
Yes.
And I would say there's about an ounce of sympathy in the whole country for him, because he just strikes people and has since coaching in Florida, since coaching Ohio State, as disingenuous, as smug, and as I only need to say what I need to say, and anything else that I do is none of your business, even if it's cheating, even if it's it comes across as arrogant, whatever it is. So this moment where he was exposed on video, where there's no denying it, where there's no sort of spinning it, although he's trying. He can't say, "I wasn't there." He can't say it was a mistaken identity or that's somebody else saying something bad about us. Here's this video that's embarrassing. It's just embarrassing to watch. But Mike and Bob, it's not evil. I mean, he's not doing anything that is a violation of anything. He's not drunk and violent or anything like that. It just is, I guess the word is, unseemly for a guy his age who exists to be sitting there enjoying this young, attractive blonde woman dancing basically
in his own club, right, Mitch?
In his own restaurant. Well, he said he went to his club and then they went to some other place
next door
where they had music and dancing, but the whole fact that he wasn't with this team after they lost, and that he decided, you know, he wanted to stay in Ohio and where he's more of a legend, you know, than in Jacksonville right now, where he's a source of criticism. I don't know. The incident itself isn't anything.
No.
This isn't a hitting a woman in an elevator video, and right. Yet the reaction to this is almost like, why isn't he fired already?
Well, there's two.
Tell me why that is.
There's two separate issues here. Two, maybe even three. There's two separate issues. The one that you're just discussing is not the important issue with regard to his continued employment. It's the fact that he chose to not go back with the team and do what you're supposed to do in theory, which is go right to the facility and sleep and get out start looking at the film of the tape of the game and sleep on the cot, you know, especially when you play, you're coaching this horseshit team. That's the idea. That's what's got people in football riled up. And what he's done with his personal life, that's between him and his wife in that regard, frankly. And right, and there's nothing egregious about it. It's unseemly and stupid that he would allow himself to be photographed in this manner. But the fact is that it's the football thing that is the big issue with people.
But if there wasn't video of this and you just had read somewhere that Meyer stayed in Ohio for an extra day to be with his family and it was just a sentence, would there be criticism of that?
Yes.
No,
it's
not
how
to this
he's
extent,
handled
but,
it.
Would be criticism.
It in this case, it, Mitch, you know, the old line is, it's not the crime, it's the cover-up.
Yeah.
In this case, it's not the crime, it's the apologies. I've been reading the football guys, Michael Silver and Ian Rappaport. Okay, apparently his own players are laughing at him. He didn't want to address the whole team at first. He went to the position meetings to apologize. And he still was apologizing yesterday. Guys, if you... If you have to apologize that many times, you know you stepped in it, okay? And I believe whether he gets banged this season, during the season, or not, this is not working. This will not work. This was a mistake on the part of the Jaguars, and it was a mistake on his part. You know what Urban Meyer's probably kicking himself for, Mitch, right now? That he didn't wait, because he probably thinks he would have had a great chance at the SC job.
Yeah, well, there's a lot. There's plenty to talk about that right now. And
please fire me so I could go coach the Trojans.
Yeah, fire me I have no choice but to go take the USC team.
So to answer the original question about whether he'll get through the season, it's entirely up to one. His constituency is one. Mr. Khan, who owns the team. Right. And he's
not sound happy, Bobby, in his statement.
Said our coach has to, quote, regain our trust and respect. That's the owner on his coach.
And, people are laughing that he even thought that Urban Meyer was a good idea, and from the Tim Tebow farce on, he should have dawned on Mr. Khan that maybe it wasn't such a good idea. Who else would have hired him? You wonder, with all the baggage that Urban Meyer brings as a rookie coach in the NFL. And aren't there allegations out there now that the players have already decided they can't stand his methodology already?
Yeah.
Long before this happened. So,
what was your feeling too, even when he was going good? Didn't you have some? I mean, I remember we've talked about this guy forever. Didn't you have some of the same feelings about this guy's attitude, his arrogance, his method, all that stuff when he was going good at Ohio State?
Oh, there's no question. It's just in a college situation, you are protected as a coach unless you do something that is just so far beyond the reach of their protection. But you're cocooned. And so, and if somebody tried to release a tape like this of Urban Meyer in Ohio State, it might never have seen the light of day. But it's not that way in the NFL. And he's 0-4. In Ohio State, he was always heading for playing for a national championship. Don't think that doesn't factor into it. It's a lot easier to criticize a guy when he's 0-4. It's a lot easier to say, oh, he's a fraud when he's 0-4. People were saying the same thing when he was coaching Ohio State. He's disingenuous. He's not honest. He sugarcoats stuff. He tries to, and it's never his fault. He tells you that he's retiring to be with his family, and then he takes another job someplace. He's been a hypocrite more than once in his career. But when your record is always 11-0, or 12-1 or whatever, stuff doesn't stick to you. Don't mistake this, Bob. If he had gone into Jacksonville and had won their first two games, or they were 2-2 or something like that, you would not have the same amount of vitriol on this as when he's 0-4 and they look like they're going nowhere. Even though they had a close game, had a chance to win a game, and they lost in the last second. It also, by the way, raises an interesting question about what happens to Trevor Lawrence with all this. If Urban Meyer ends up being a bust, a waste, he's fired after 1 year or whatever. Look at some of the other guys right now in his class, okay? Justin Fields got the starting job in Chicago. Mac Jones in New England, who right now stock is, you have to say, he's the highest of the guys who were drafted in terms of what people are thinking about him. Nobody's talking about Trevor Lawrence.
Zach Wilson, Mitch. Played great. Got a game.
But nobody's talking about Trevor Lawrence.
What does this
do to him, for a year of your wasted year?
Mitch and Bob, there's an old line that always covers stuff like this, and it's that adversity doesn't build a character, it reveals it, okay? Mm-hmm. And it has revealed it in Jacksonville. And Mitch, go all the way back to Florida with this guy when he was looking the other way on what his players were doing off the field with this epic rap sheet that he had when he was coaching there. But he had Tim Tebow to provide cover for him, and they were winning national championships. You're right. What would the narrative be right now? Even if they were 2-2, what would the narrative be? Oh, he stepped into the NFL without missing a beat.
Yeah, no, you're right. Right.
Did you remember, it was only 3 years ago, he was suspended for the first three games of the Ohio State season.
Right, for lying. For lying.
Yeah, by Ohio State, after they investigated himself, and they didn't want to touch him at all. He retired twice for the health concerns, and yet he's always managed to come back to a better job. It's just, he's one of these guys that he's a little creepy in his... his explanations of things, and this goes right to it. This was bad judgment at the best, and maybe something more, because as you point out, Mike, he's apologizing an awful lot. You know, and maybe he's just trying to make sure that nothing else comes out of that thing. But if nothing else is learned from this, to put a cap on it, and this goes for everybody in sports and even us and people who are tangential to the sports, do not think when you are out in public that someone is not filming you at all times.
Right. Oh.
Just unless it's in your house, do not think, even on the highway, even driving, even getting out of your car, someone, this is the world that we live in now, someone is filming you at all times. And if this had been 20 years ago and someone said, I saw Urban Meyer at a club and there was a blonde, you know, who was dancing around with them, that's all it would be. It would never lift off. Nobody would write about it. Nobody would talk about it. But a piece of video can end your career.
Mitch, Sean Powell, who is now writing for NBA.com, used to write a column for Newsday. He once said what you just, he wrote that the whole world has become a dark room. Okay, and anybody doesn't know that, then that's on them. I'll give you, but before we go to this weekend's game, I'll give you guys one more thought. 2007, Bobby Petrino resigned either 12 or 13 games into his tenure with the Falcons to go take the Razorbacks job. Okay, and Mitch, when we talk about SC, I don't know how much baggage they think he has, but maybe he is in play for that job.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? Bad time.
What do you like? We got one game this weekend, and then we got an undercard. Okay, the Sunday night game is great because who would have ever thought that a month into the season, the Chiefs would have a must-win game? They kind of have a must-win game against the Bills on Sunday night.
Doesn't matter what their record is; they remain compelling television, team of surpassing it just because of the quarterback, and you know that's that. So yeah, I had to start this game, and you know, and I think Buffalo, certainly everybody identifies, has got a real shot to do something great this year. So to me, that game stands out as much as any game this weekend, which is really otherwise a rather blah weekend in terms of glamour matchups. There aren't too many.
Yeah, I think this is a big game because I think this is one of those games that if Patrick Mahomes just plays lights out, it's a little bit of like, okay, you doubted me, you know, you doubted us, you know, we just knocked off Buffalo, who has looked like world beaters in the last couple of games, and for Buffalo, this is one of those statement games. It's like, okay, we're not just outside the inner bubble for championships. We belong right with you here, and we're gonna beat you. You know, you may be the class of the AFC. If so, we're gonna make a statement, and we're gonna beat you. So this is a big for both of them. Mike, you're right. You don't want to be 2-3 at this point in the season,
especially the way the rest of the division's playing, Mitch.
That's right. That's right. You know, you want to win it. You don't want to go in as a wild card. So this is I like this game, and you know, obviously we're gonna be watching the quarterbacks, but there's a lot more to both of these teams than just their quarterbacks, and we're gonna see what's on display there. I am curious about tonight's game, only in that the bloom has come a little bit off of Matthew Stafford's rose out there in Los Angeles after the last game. The team didn't play great, but he particularly didn't play great. It wasn't so much that, you know, the numbers or turnovers, but he overthrew guys when there were opportunities. If he hit his passes the way he had been hitting them the first couple of weeks, they probably would have won that game. And, you know, he threw a pick that he basically telegraphed. And now he's going against this Seattle team. Bob, I know you can't stand Seattle because you're tired of the buildup for them, and you've sworn off of them.
It's nailed shut.
Right. But it's what makes them so maddening is exactly why a game like this on national television, I can see Russell Wilson suddenly looking like Russell Wilson. And even though they're 2-2 this year, he did basically win a game with his legs last week, which is, for a guy his age, is pretty good. And if they do that and Los Angeles slips to 3-2 with Arizona playing the way that they're playing, that's a significant development for them.
Or another way to put it is if Russell Wilson plays like Kyler Murray.
Yeah, right.
By the way, we are sponsored by Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. There's one other game that actually... Man, if it doesn't shake down the Thunder in the NFC, it's actually become watchable just because Daniel Jones threw for 400 yards against Saints last Sunday. I'm actually kind of interested to see if the Cowboys are going to continue to build on what they've done so far, and that means on both sides of the ball because we talked about this the other day. Do we not think that they have so far looked like one of the better teams in pro football?
Yes, absolutely. I think tension has to be paid. I do. And, you know, they're such a polarizing team. You're doing more laughing at them and laughing at Jerry Jones the last few years but than anything else. But I think the chuckling has stopped. I think they're quite legit.
Look, what's happened with Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard is a big deal there, too. You know, they got a killer rushing attack.
Yep.
Elliott went out and lost a lot of weight and did a lot of offseason work, and he looks fantastic this year. And Pollard was just a shock to me. And Prescott's playing the best football of his career. So, I'd be shocked if they lose this game, Mike. I mean,
Giants
won once. I think they're going to win big.
You know who the Giants just hope that Saquon Barkley, now that he's healthy again, grows up to be? Zeke. That's exactly what they hope that he can be Zeke to Daniel Jones's Dak.
And really, the longer he goes on, and given the nature of how short a running back's arc is in the NFL, the more you have to admire Ezekiel Elliott, who was a high draft pick with a great college resume, who has lived up to it in the NFL. Now, I may not like his off-field stuff and all the rest of it, but as a reliable running back, there just aren't that many anymore. I mean, guys have one-season careers now at that position, and then you don't hear from them again. And he's there every year, and he looks like he's getting better. So, yeah, I think that's an interesting game to watch, but I think they're going to win big. All right, does that we'll mention the college game without talking about it, but Iowa is playing Penn State, big game, 3-4. Okay, somewhere in the Big Ten, there's going to be a shakeup of the rankings there. All right, meanwhile, this week's parting shots are brought to you by Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com and make sure to use your keyword reporters and save over 50% when you order the deluxe grill out assortment. Plus, get 12 free Omaha Steaks burgers and keep making memories with the ones you love. That's omahasteaks.com. Use the keyword reporters and go to the search box at the top of the webpage and type in reporters to get this special deal. Time for the parting shots. Mike Lupica, lead us off.
Now, parting shots.
Okay, as mentioned, the other night after the Yankees lost to the Red Sox, Aaron Boone actually did say, quote, "The league has closed the gap on us." Wait, what? What gap? If there's anybody not doing any gap closing over the past few years, and in the 20 years when the Yankees have won one World Series, it's them. You know how many AL East titles the Yankees have won in the past decade? Two. You know how much they've spent on baseball players in that time? Around $2.5 billion. You know who else spends like that? The Dodgers, who won 7 NL West titles in a row and would have made it 8 this year if the team they were chasing hadn't won 107 games. You know how many World Series the Red Sox have won to the Yankees won over the last 18 seasons? 4. Now the Yankees don't even make a division series and might go into next season as the 4th best team in their own division.
Attention, NBA fans. Are you aware of this year's official, quote, point of emphasis, unquote? Now, you know how James Harden and Steph Curry make a great portion of their livings by upfaking an opposing player and then jumping into him, after which they, not the innocent defender, stroll to the line? Well, that's history now. Regulating that is the new point of emphasis. Yes, I hear you laughing. You'll believe it when you see it. Me too. I think Steph will survive, but Harden has led the league in free throw attempts 7 times, and I doubt he'll be pleased at this obvious attack on him and his game. Now, we all know that in these matters, things are generally monitored closely during the exhibitions and then let go again when we hear the actual bell ring. Hey, it's just something for you to keep your eye on. I'm your watchdog. That's what I'm here for.
As someone who lives just a few miles from Canada, we all know around here that while Canadians are warm, polite, unassuming, and humble, you do not want to mess with their authorities. Anyone going through the tunnel between Windsor and Detroit can tell you that. NBA players are about to learn that lesson in their own way. Canada has announced that all NBA players must pass a PCR test before entering the country to play the Raptors. Every player, regardless of vax status, and unvaccinated players will be quarantined. Any violation of that quarantine could result in 6 months in jail and a $750,000 fine. And if you don't think Canada is serious about this stuff, take a look at some of the videos out there of authorities arresting even religious clerics for rules violations up north. Moral of the story, you may be the kings of the court in America, but don't mess with the Great White North. That's going to wrap it up. Yeah, keep it in mind. That's going to wrap it up for today's program. We do this every Monday and Thursday, so we'll be back on Monday after a big weekend of football, professional, college, and, of course, baseball playoffs. A lot to look forward to there. If you like what you heard, leave us a comment or leave us a rating. We always appreciate that. And you can find this podcast on Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, Pandora, and any place you get popular podcasts. Until we see you on Monday, on behalf of Bob Ryan and Mike Lupica, I'm Mitch Albom, wishing you a great weekend.